So one of my pet peeves in yoga, with the modern yoga that I think is getting astray, I think it's glamorizing and glorifying the aesthetic beauty. Everyone's wearing their perfect clothes or their favorite outfit. All the postures are to lead you to greater introspection and to greater humility even.
Thanks for checking out the podcast. New episodes with a new guest in a new location premiere every Thursday afternoon. Today's guest is Stephen Fletcher. He's the owner and operator of a yoga studio in Birmingham, Alabama called The Yoga Circle. Stephen and I had tons to talk about, so I'm splitting this episode into two parts. Look for part two next week. For those of you that are sick of the podcast where I talk about jujitsu, you're in luck. Because jujitsu, you're learning how to hurt and kill other people. Yoga's pretty much the opposite. You're learning how to strengthen and heal yourself. And if you're not interested in yoga, don't worry. We talk about physiology and general health and happiness and finding your peace and your passion, and that's relevant to everybody. Before our interview, I spent my morning drinking water in preparation for an hour of hot yoga, which is 1 hour of stretching and posing in a room heated to about 100 degrees. It was rough, but worth it. After the class, Stephen and I sat down for a chat. It's a little hot in here, man.
Yeah, definitely. A little humid.
a little steamy in here, my friend. Well, man, we just finished, what was that, an hour and 15 or so?
Yeah, it went an hour and 15, yeah.
That's great. And how hot is it in this room?
It probably made it to actual temp, maybe 97, 98 today. Humidity was probably 80, though, 85. It's pretty humid in here. We aim for 105 typically.
And this was technically a hot soul class?
That's just the name I gave it. It's based off of a traditional series called Bikram Yoga that's been around since the 70s. Pretty popular. Most people know of it.
How long have you been doing yoga?
I guess since about 1999, maybe 1998, my sister took me to my first class at the UAB Dance Annex Center, like before yoga even was understood. And this lady named Fran Glendening taught for us while she smoked out the back. No, I'm just kidding. But she was a great lady. She introduced, we did yoga, not even on mats. We did it on the old gym blue mats that you roll out that fold up. And can you picture us all on those mats doing it?
Yeah. Like,
and that was my first yoga class. And even that first class, I mean, I never knew what was coming, but I walked out of it and I was just like, something seems lighter or different. I see the, you know, you just see more of the environment a little bit. And and hot yoga hooked me later.
Nice. My yoga experience started here. In fact, this is the first place I ever tried yoga, ever went ever. And the reason I came is because I was 27 years old. And I was having some major back problems just from sitting in a computer and working all day. And my back was spasming. I was sitting on the couch, and my back started spasming, painful like it does, you know, 10, 12 times a day at this point in my life. And I stood up and just had to lay flat on the ground on my living room floor. And because my back hurt so much, I could not get up. I lived alone at the time. I was trapped on my living room floor like one of the old people from one of the Life Alert commercials. Yeah. And I looked around and I'm just like, I'm trapped on my floor right now. I'm 27 years old and I cannot get up. I got to do something. And I went to a chiropractor during all this back pain stuff was going on. I went to a chiropractor and nothing personal, but I've never had any success whatsoever from a chiropractor at all. I've never had any improvement. If it's just chiropractic therapy, you have to have the physical therapy tied along with it. And so being 27 years old, not able to really walk or run and just being in agony, if you've never had back pain before, it's agonizing. I've got two herniated discs and two degenerative discs. So I've got a bad back, you know. And I started coming here. And if I came Tuesday, Thursday, by that Friday, 2 weeks later, I was a brand new man. I could run, I could sprint, I could walk, I could do everything, man. I could do everything pain free. And so many people go through life, they have a little twinge, a little something in their back happen, and they go to a doctor and they get a shot. And that's a temporary patch. with the problem on the tail end being even worse than it was when you first started there. Like I said, I've got a back that is rotten and broken. I run a mile every single day, a sub 8 minute mile every single day. And it's only because of the techniques that I've learned in yoga, how to lengthen my tendons in the right way, how to strengthen my spine in the right way, that it enabled me to continue doing all the other things that I want to do in my life.
And did it change your lifestyle a little bit too, as far as, like you said, you were sitting a lot? So when it's not only like that shots from doctors don't help necessarily for steroid, but like they're not talking about, well, what's causing this in the first place? Like sitting around all day at a computer with no awareness that, hey, I need to move my spine. I need to like adjust this. Like, did that change a little?
For sure. For sure. How I live, you know, I don't sit and work for 8 hours at a time anymore, which I was doing, you know, and that's how my spine, that's how the discs in my spine died. You know, I killed them by not giving them fresh blood. And so I'm trying to work out of that pit still every day now, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, my lifestyle definitely changed. And like, I used to think that when I was trying to touch my toes and the pain that I was feeling in my legs was bad, so I shouldn't try to do that. No, you should be able to touch your toes. I just want to say thanks for giving me my life back, man. Seriously.
Well, thanks for being a good example and coming and making it happen, you know.
Yeah, you got to come.
You got to try. Yeah.
For example, the body awareness thing, when we do one of the very first early stretches, and that's when you put your hands above your head and do kind of like make your body half moon. Yeah, like a C shape. You're leaning one way, leaning the other. And you said to me, pull your shoulders away from your ears. I didn't realize that when I was putting my hands above my head, my shoulders like, were, yeah, at my ears. Like that. And that's how I do everything. That's how I type. My shoulders are at my ear level. You know, my ear lobes are touching the top of my shoulders. Like, that's how I type. That's how I cook. And I've had to relearn a lot of things. Like, I'll be cooking, cutting carrots and realize that my shoulders are at my ears and I have to change that.
Yeah.
So
awareness is the true practice.
Yeah.
Paying attention to how you're doing and what you're doing.
I know that we've got the heat off now at this point, but one of my cameras was actually overheating because it's so hot in here.
It's good for the camera.
Yeah.
It'll heal it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, but honestly, guys, I know the hot sounds, it sounds crazy to sit in a room and stretch at 97, 98 degrees, but we use hot and cold packs all the time. This is proven science, guys. So don't
heat shock proteins. Actually, if you want to Google heat shock proteins, look up what they do. That's part of what happens when you go to a hot class. There's actually cold shock proteins apparently too, like the cold submersion stuff that people do.
Yeah, you see those cryotherapy chambers that people are all crazy about. People jumping into ice, icy water and stuff like that. Polar bear challenge or whatever.
Yep, all that stuff.
But what is a heat shock protein?
It's something that's released that mimics, it's going to sound crazy, but that your body thinks it's dying, you know, to a degree. It's going almost towards a near-death experience. It's preparing for extenuating circumstances that are beyond its control.
So let's talk about some of the physical, problems that a lot of people have that can be solved with yoga. What does it mean? Because a lot of people have trouble. Let's just start with our hands.
Well, I mean, interesting that I guess you start with the hands or the furthest extremity from things, you know. But, everything they say is tied into the core. And this, you know, her nervous system is what it's really all about. It's about getting all of this established first so that everything out here can start to take shape from what it has to adhere to. Kind of like there's a solar system and our planets have to go around it in certain elliptical orbits and they create everything that it is. That the teaching is really a centered teaching, and it's, you know, core values are associated with core muscles. But as far as just a simple thing, like, hey, if you're spreading your hand and then contracting it, it's making it almost breathe. It's making it expand and contract. So that's going to, of course, invite blood through the area. When you make a tourniquet with your hands for a moment, even there's a minor tourniquet probably when you're engaging and pushing down in a plank or a downward dog, when you come out of that, then it returns to normal and blood rushes through there almost a higher speed. And so it can kind of vascularly clean the walls of your veins and, just spreading your muscles. It's about creating space in your body. Like, things build up like dust on the shelves. And if we don't take the dust out of the grime or the mechanisms out of the gears, all this stuff that binds up and makes things get rusty.
For sure.
Yeah.
I was in a push-up position in here one time and you told me to geckoize my hands. Basically spread your hands out like a gecko has hands, yeah. You know?
Surface area distribution as well.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that when I was doing a push-up, just my hands were just bunched. You know, they were just bunched up. And if you live bunched up everywhere, you know,
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah, I was living bunched up.
It's
and
the
I
metaphor.
Didn't realize it.
Yeah, it's like what you're doing here is probably to some reflection of what you're doing in other mediums and other ways with your mind or your social life or your relationships to everything that you are. You know, you want to what you're doing here is going to bring a picture or a similar concept along, and that's where I find the coolest stuff. That's why I enjoy teaching. When I'm talking about someone's body, and it brings me to an epiphany about the nature of society. You know, now we're making headway into the true nature of being a human.
I was in a class one time, and you go, pull your head backwards or whatever. And I literally, let's see if you can see this. I literally did this. I pulled my ears backwards.
Ears and eyebrows.
Yeah, ears and eyebrows backwards. And you were like, no, your actual head. And I look in the mirror and my face is way forward. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to move my head. This is terrible. So it's, you know, once again, people need to spend more time looking in the mirror, but not for the reason that a lot of people look in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to look in the mirror to see how straight your spine is.
Yeah, the metaphorical mirror too of just reflecting back on yourself for sure. Okay, so it's really a mental challenge just to start over, and that's where a lot of people use it. It's a mental challenge to step into 100 degrees. People are facing their fears to a degree. The heat makes things expand. Like when things are hot, you tend to relax and be a little more docile and calm and laid back. You know, molecules expand in the heat. In this room, you will get accelerated benefits because of that. Your body relaxes, your muscles open up, and therefore you don't really have to work too hard. We don't want you to have to grunt and grind every pose out. We want you to be able to be chill and relax, and the heat serves as an expansive tool and allows you to work into your body in an accelerated way. And of course, purifies you through your sweat, you know, how much you're detoxing through that or whatever. It's a great hangover cure. It's hell while you're doing it, but when you're on the other side, your headache's gone, you feel better, everything's out of you.
People think yoga is just like weird people doing weird poses for no reason. Believe me, we're not sitting in this super hot, agonizing room doing all these things for no reason. The tangible benefits on the back end are crazy. You mentioned sweating out a ton. Something weird happens after a hot class like this. Your sweat goes from being smelly to being sweet. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, if you sweat enough, you'll actually be clean when you leave. You'll look, got everything out. It removes all the toxins and all the bad food. It like runs down and you'll be clean again.
It's amazing. Like, yeah. You know how, like, if you are standing by a campfire, 8 hours later, if you take a shower, you can smell campfire?
Yeah.
Something happens after I do yoga. In the shower, that sweet smell of sweet sweat fills the shower up. I'm like, this is crazy. I got to the point where I sweat so much and I got everything bad out of me to the point where my sweat no longer stinks. It's now just sweet, man.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It's a shower from the inside instead of the outside. That's what we call this. I mean, you get it out the other way instead of in. Yeah, yeah. It's
good. Yeah. There's tons of poses, too, where we're putting pressure on our guts and internal organs in weird ways.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the idea behind poses. Yeah, you're supposed to be compressing and opening and moving. It's not just about muscles and bones, which, you know, a lot of times we just think it's about in physical therapy type aspects.
Yeah.
But it's about manipulating the inner spaces in your body. I mean, the guy that was in here, Dane, that you had on the camera, I mean, if you get him to do his belly roll, it's ridiculous. You'll see this guy's belly fluctuate like a wave in and out.
Man.
And he can literally like make himself go to the bathroom right then if he wants to, probably. I mean, that getting full control over your organs.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
Yeah, so.
Like I said, I had zero body awareness, and I thought I was aware, you know. We all lack awareness in of ourselves in some kind of way. We're all oblivious. We're all a little delusional in some kind of way.
Yeah.
But I was incredible. I thought I had good balance because I skateboarded, you know. I thought I had good balance. Try standing on one foot. Just one. And like and lift your leg, you know. Just bring your knee up to your chest while standing on one foot. It's so hard, and it works this like the chain of muscles, like in your core or whatever, in a crazy way. When you are holding yourself up with one side of your body and the other side you have to support.
Yeah, and if you're trying to keep it even, that's all the rest of the muscles kind of stepping up to meet that missing element that you've taken out. And so, I mean, again, it points back to philosophy. You kind of to get rid of something is to almost to appreciate it, to understand it, and to make everything else around it strong for the moment.
I do everything at 100% speed, But slowing down your movements really make you isolate all those little muscles, the ones that you're using incorrectly, the ones that you think you're using and you're not. It really forces you, like, slowly lift your foot up off the ground and then slowly put it back down. Because the tendency is to want to go, oh, I did it, you know? But as you, instead of like falling out of that, ease out of it, and you'll get all kinds of muscular benefits.
The slower you go, the more you're exacting the muscle that you're using. Like, try to walk on a railroad track slowly is a lot harder than kind of just going, because that momentum keeps you in balance, and so you're just kind of going with the flow. As you move slow, like, you really have to control it.
I'm sure you've seen, with people being as glued to their phones as they are, and I myself am included, people coming in with neck problems and shoulder problems. I had a pinched nerve in my neck from leaning over and looking, you know, looking down too much, and my shoulder was on fire, but it was in my neck. And I thought I thought I injured my shoulder in jiu-jitsu, but it was really the pulling and the forward motion. But yeah, as people look and are glued to their phones way, way more, I'm starting to see, you know how old people have that bump on the back of their neck?
Thoracic hump, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like a hunchback kind of thing.
Yeah, it starts at the base of the neck, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And that, I think, we're going to see a lot of young kids with that. And I do. I turn a corner, and our interns, they don't realize it, but their chin is at the level of their sternum, and they're just looking at their phones, you know? And living like that is going to, it's going to catch up to you in your 30s, man.
And again, think about this, again, the societal implications of everyone looking this way, not taking in the world, not seeing, not connecting to people in a way. Well, the classic thing is the kids that sit right next to each other and are texting each other instead of just, hey, I'm just have a conversation. I'm right here, you know?
Yeah, man.
But it's got greater implications than just physical. The physical stuff will always be symptomatic still to me. And it's a problem, and it's not great. And nobody wants to feel bad and be hunched over and having all sorts of medical issues because of that. Because, you know, you're closing off your throat there too, your throat chakra, if you want to go esoteric. But, you know, it's got other implications too. And that's the main thing we're after. We can't disappear into these weird bubbles of things where we feel isolated from people and can shoot out little daggers or shoot out little good things to who we want to. We need to be more real, eye contact, and talking to people in this world, like me and you are talking, you know?
Yeah, man. Naturally, I have terrible posture, or not naturally, but you know what I'm saying.
It develops.
I have terrible posture. Yes, I've developed terrible posture. And something that's really, you know, encouraged me is that all the work that I do, doing this conscious effort of lengthening and strengthening, that conscious effort leads to unconscious results. You know what I'm saying?
And then it becomes your norm. You update your default mode to something that's better for you if you keep watching it. You know, anything that becomes overly routine will just continue to dig a hole for you, you know, if you don't step out of it sometimes and update it. Like, we refresh our computers and our phones and everything else.
You mentioned Bikram.
Yeah.
And that is an incredibly popular style of yoga, almost like CrossFit is a style of working out. People still use the term Bikram, even though there was kind of some like a personal fallout with that guy, or what did I
said his name. I don't use it too much in class unless I say something like, well, Bikram is a stickler about this, but I don't call this necessarily Bikram yoga or 26, you know, his postures. There was a thing. I don't know how far you want to go into that on this.
Yeah, no, that's stuff I want to talk about because, you know, people are flawed and we can't ever put anybody on a pedestal. You know, everybody screws up. Everybody screws up. And that sucks, man. That's sad. It's like the dude became a superstar in the yoga world and it went to his head or something.
He did, man. At first he really had the right heart. I really truly believe about Bikram, if I can put him in a nutshell as best I can, because I've met the guy. He had, you know,
problems
with women and things like that,
right,
that nature, and using his power. But his heart was in it. And his original story was that he came here and he offered yoga for free. But our American capitalistic society didn't value anything that was for free. He started charging a lot of money for it. People thought it was worth a lot because of that, or associated, well, money means you know, that value, it's good, it's sure. value. And so he did. He became super rich, way beyond rich. And I think he did let it go to his head.
Yeah. But I think that it's just, we always have to check ourselves. We always have to. I am a Christian, and I know that if I'm in this situation, I'm going to make a bad decision. So I need to not put myself in that situation, you know, always keeping our guard up, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a code of ethics that's even before, you know, yoga has eight limbs, supposedly. It's not like a tier system where you do this and then you do that and then you graduate and you're eventually here, but it is eight limbs that kind of swim in and out of each other. But before there's hatha yoga, which is sun moon physical yoga, that's the only yoga that is popular in the West,
sure.
Hatha yoga, physical body orientation, presentation,
yeah.
aesthetics, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a smaller sect of people that are doing other types of yoga that, but, you know, before there's that, there is yama and niyama, which are basically just a code of ethics, restraints, think do's and don'ts,
yeah.
you know, which, you know, will cross over with Christian ethics and ethics from any major religion that are all trying to point us to being a good person and being aware of things in the world and that your actions have results, you know. And if you look at your actions and you look at your results, you can start to learn what serves the greater good and what starts to bring things down. And then it's up to you. Then it's always up to you. Your choices, you make them.
With the proliferation of the internet and Instagram, social media, is people that are insta famous for doing yoga.
Yeah, deep breath. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So how do you feel about that?
Deep breath. Yeah, no, it's not my favorite thing at all.
Sure.
But I gotta be open that I'm not huge into Instagram and social medias, and although I've dabbled in them and seen, I know what they're about and understand them, they're just not my favorite thing, and I might just be a little partial. I
sure.
being my generation, being
sure.
42,
yeah.
43, I just, but as far as what it's doing for the yoga culture is, I think it's glamorizing and glorifying the aesthetic beauty. Everyone's wearing their perfect clothes or their favorite outfit, their Lulu top or this or that. You know, and they're doing some crazy pose usually that I'm sure they've worked to get in, or, you know, it's not like the process wasn't good for them at all to get there, but it's just made yoga this superficial, faddish thing to me that yoga is not in its roots and its origins. It's not about outward display. It's not about showing everybody all that you can do and making a trophy out of your posture and putting it on a shelf. And, you know, it's all the postures are to lead you to greater introspection and to greater humility, even, that you can place yourself beneath things to see things better and not be better or worse or have this idea of comparison. And I just think it's diluting it, it's muddying up, and it's just sending out the wrong idea to a lot of people.
Like, they see a super fancy pose and they think, okay, that's yoga, that's how I have to do it.
Yeah. And that's what you're working towards. And that's what you should be aiming for. Like, there's a goal in yoga that's a pose and not the goal to know yourself better or to become a better person in the world, like the ethical code of it would suggest. And it's just taking it farther and farther away from its roots to me. And that's just the scary part, because it's the telephone game. Things are just lost in translation. And it's not, yoga should be flexible. It should change with the times. It should be something that you can use in modern society in a way, but it's got to be in touch with origins, because its roots are what it's about. The stillness, the meditation, the slowing down of life in a busy world, the balance that you want to create in your world. To me, the fast yoga and the frenzied yoga and the outward display of here I am and look how good I look in this is just taking you further and further away into
the
frenetic energy. Yeah. And the frenetic outward display. It's just, yeah. It's not about that to me.
Yeah. It's a weird feeling, because it's so hot in here. Like, the very first time I came, I brought a cotton shirt and kept it on. And within 30 minutes, I realized, like, all right, the cotton's binding to me and this is screwing me up. Oh, this is why all the other guys in the room don't have shirts on. Because you're so sweaty that unless you could, I mean, a lot of people keep a, you know, really stretchy athletic shirt on. Mm. And that's great, you know, if you want to do that too. But I got to the point where I could comfortably take my shirt off in a room, you know, and sweat with a bunch of strangers around me and not think about it. You know, it took me a little while to look in the mirror and be like, dude, you aren't nearly as ripped as you think you are, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was a place where after two months, I would say, of coming here twice a week, I got to the point where I could look in the mirror and never think about that and never worry about that and never even worry about the people around me either, you know?
It brings up a good point. That's one of the things I guess I'm most proud of, or the best manifestation of what was built here and what happened, is the community. I can't even speak enough. Like, you saw all the people in here today and everybody, and how sweet everybody is and how forgiving and kind and open and non-judgmental, because, I mean, we just have everybody type in here. We got someone that can hardly move in the back. We got a full-on athlete over here. We got people that can do this and that, but everybody is like kind of coming together for something. And that's just what happens here. I mean, people can shed their skin and be comfortable and let go and literally like pull things off and just be okay with that, you know, and not worry about someone coming at them or what they look like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. I was in between a older African-American gentleman and a younger white chick.
Yeah.
I should probably re-say that.
However you
young
want.
Lady.
Yes. Yeah.
But you know, and then there's me in the middle and all types in between, you know, over my left shoulder, that woman, you know, could have been my mom's mom.
Yeah. That old. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. She's in here doing her yoga. You know, there are variations of poses that people, different people have different bodies, different abilities, yeah, and different, edges. You know, you're always talking about finding
edge.
That edge.
The edge is placed in between. Yeah.
Talk about the edge. What does that mean?
Well, sometimes I make it a metaphor. Like, okay, the edge of a cliff is dangerous and a little scary, but it's also really beautiful because you see more. You see out in the open. The closer you get, the more it opens up, the more beauty you take, but also the closer you're kind of getting to a danger zone. Now you're flirting with stability and security, both feet on the ground, and floating with the feeling of flying and this transcendence of, oh my God, here we come. We're coming up on the roller coaster hill. And riding that in between, you know, is exactly where you want to be, because it gives you the best of both worlds and kind of, you know, that's where the growth is. That's where the magic is a lot of times. The middle path you'll hear about in a lot of philosophies too, you know, watching out for extremes and being able to use those to understand the middle a little bit better, that you're not stuck overly so with your foot in the mud, you know, in a glass case where all air and everything can't get in, and but you can't get out, nothing can get to you, versus being just off the wall, always on the edge, never settled. You know, we need a little, that's just the duality, the union that is in yoga. But yeah, I don't. comes out better in class a lot of times.
Dude, you really do. You just riff for an hour and 15 minutes. You tell us, all right, now let's do this stretch. You give us the directions, and then you just riff, man. Like, just hearing just some good blanket, positive, introspective philosophy, that's just like icing on the cake here, man. You riff for an hour and a half every time, and it doesn't feel repetitive. It feels off the cuff, and it feels genuine, and huge props to you, man.
Thanks.
On not only your, you know, your ability to teach us yoga, but your ability just to speak about life and you know, the head game that happens in yoga and everywhere, man. You do a great job.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's like, I guess, a stream of consciousness, but I really feel like if I clear my mind and let the posture, talk about the posture a little bit, and then allow myself to take in the bodies and the energy, they're going to point me towards a more philosophical riff that I can kind of play upon, that we can connect all this to beyond the body, because that's what I'm still trying to preach. It's not about the body. We're doing poses, but it's not about the poses. They are the subject. The object of all your yoga classes is your mind. So one of my pet peeves in yoga, with the modern yoga that I think is getting astray from what is, that the song list is made up of things, of songs that you know, like the most popular songs on the radio sometimes, loud, super loud, louder than the teacher sometimes, bombarding your senses with a song that you can sing every word to. And I've seen it in class. I'm seeing, watching there singing along to, you know, some Madonna or Prince song or whatever it is. I'm like, how are you calling that yoga when you're singing someone's lyrics that, and you're doing this yoga over there? Now, if it was a mantra and you were sitting there going, you know, little red Corvette, you know, whatever, sure, sure. You know, and you're using that consciously to try to meditate. Okay, that's one thing.
Sure.
If it's just popular music for the sake of having popular music so people are entertained,
right,
while they're doing yoga, because yoga is grueling and hot and hard, and you're working out at Iron Tribe or on the treadmill and you're used to having a TV and watching the news or anything in front of you, you can't pay attention to another person. If we had the TV on in the background right now, we'd keep like
checking it out.
And then we wouldn't really be present with each other.
Yeah, man.
And so music to me is an important part. I love music. I'm a musician and I love pop music sometimes,
yeah,
and songs that I know, and I will sing a song over and over. But if it's in yoga class, to me, it's inappropriate. And so I try to keep my music minimal and instrumental typically.
Yeah.
Not that I won't make exceptions. Everything in moderation, including moderation.
Breathing is such a huge part of yoga. Like, yeah, a lot of people don't realize they take shallow breaths. Like, they're breathing with 20% of their lungs, you know?
Yep.
That's, by the way, I didn't know how to breathe before yoga too. I was all chest breathing.
Yeah.
And I got good at, you know, stomach breathing, diaphragm breathing, low breathing, in moments of purposeful meditation, or, you know, whatever you want to call trying to relax, you know, actively trying to relax. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but, I can be very stressed out and not realize it. And then as soon as I realize it, I'm like, dude, go stretch, go breathe, spend 60 seconds away from this computer that you're having to edit on, you know, for hours and hours and hours. Go spend 60 seconds every 30 minutes and you're going to be more productive. You're going to feel better. You're not going to be all jammed up.
Absolutely.
And tied up in knots like a rag, you know?
So important. It's important that you said that, because that's what people have to do if they work at a desk or an office. You've got to get up and move and change your eye focus and your head and everything else for a minute.
There's a ton of, you're using a lot of vernacular, a lot of yoga words, you know, and that's easy. Yoga is, everything's easy to make fun of, but yoga is easy to make fun of because there's so much of that. But it's really not any different than like football. You've got a huddle, you got a snap. It's just quick words to describe a kind of complex action.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, what are some of the most common words, that are used in yoga?
So now we're getting into another language. The language of yoga is Sanskrit, you know, which that's...
Is it?
Yeah, that's...
I did not know that.
One of the oldest languages in the world, maybe the oldest. They don't know for sure, I guess, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so all the poses are in Sanskrit, and a lot of the words and concepts are based off of Sanskrit words,
yeah,
from, you know, ancient India. So Savasana means corpse pose. Anything with asana at the end, asana means
pose.
And actually, again, almost they translate into paragraphs. The word asana actually means seated quietly, seated comfortably. That refers to pose, and they're talking about the seat of your mind within a shape of your body when they talk about asana. So even in the literature, from the pose doesn't even mean physical pose. Like, again,
yeah,
we misinterpret it. It means seated quietly, seated comfortably in a particular shape that you're not resisting in your mind and fighting and going, why is this, you know,
yeah,
not complaining,
yeah,
about it inside. We want you to focus on your body, but we also want you to let that go as soon as that's over. And by focusing on your body and directing your thoughts inward to what you're doing very acutely and specifically, you will find that your mind is clearer on the flip side. But if you go in there and try to meditate, how many times have you, or anybody that might be listening, tried to sit down and just meditate? I'm just going to clear my mind. I'm going to meditate. I'm meditating. I'm not meditating. Wait, am I meditating? You know, and you're trying to meditate, you're thinking about it. And as soon as you're thinking you're meditating, you're not meditating anymore because you're thinking about it. You've already put a thought and all this stuff that gives it too much heaviness and identity. Meditation occurs naturally when we're in love or when we're in art or when we're enamored in a project, when we're caught up in something. Hell, I mean, it can be your favorite football game. If you're a football fan, I mean, you're into Alabama, you love watching them run the ball, and you're just in it, you're nowhere else. You're kind of meditating, you know? And of course, it'd be nice to be able to sit down and clear your mind, but that's why you're involving yourself in natural meditations, getting your body to a supple state that you could sit for longer periods if that's what you wanted to do. I don't think that's mandatory for everybody, but... finding what you love and diving into it and losing track of time, like where you're not, oh crap, I forgot to eat. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the best meditation, I think.
That's it for part one of this episode. Part two will pick up next Thursday where this episode left off. And we'll see you next week with yoga part two.
Your ribcage shouldn't flare up when you breathe. Your stomach should. So breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in.